Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 97th episode of the Open Paddock Podcast. Sean joining you as I always do, and Mike is on sabbatical. So this week we have with us Doug in the number two spot. Hello, Doug.
Hey.
Much more calm and relaxed show this evening, as last weekend we were still reeling off the Toronto race, and you know the spirits were a bit high and plentiful, to be honest, if we're talking about proper spirits. So this
yeah
week,
multiple use of that term.
Yes, very universal here at Open Paddock. But this week we have a much reduced show, as we've just got a few things in rally to cover. Brief IndyCar news, a little bit in the Maz Road Indy, especially with the Firestone Indy Lights, and then we'll hit up a little bit of ALMS and pretty much crickets in the Formula One world, but we will look ahead to the German Grand Prix this weekend, as it promises to be a pretty decent race, I imagine. But we're going to start off with the rally segment. And this weekend was the end of the Rally America, or the Rally Car / Rally America Championship. And we finally, I mean, well, what am I saying? We're not even all the way through summer and the season's already over, so that's kind of lame. But we did have the final race, the New England Forest Rally. And now we prepare for X Games.
Well, I think that was part of the thinking this year, was to have the championship wrapped up by the X Games. Instead of, you know, of course, as before, they extended it on past the X Games, but a lot of people kind of dropped out after that. They were participating solely to kind of work their way into the X Games, and then they bailed.
Yes, but great rally. We had Antoine Lestage win the rally. Second place went to David Higgins and Team Subaru. The final spot on the podium went to Travis Hansen and the Super Production, Production champions. So not a bad haul for Mr. Hansen, who finishes third on the podium. Gets the Super he gets the Super Production trophy, as well as third overall in the championship. So not a bad haul for Mr. Hansen. So, you know,
think we'll see him at X Games again this year?
Well, he's automatically got an invitation, seeing as though he finished in the top four of the championship points. He's automatically invited.
Nice. Well, let's hope he keeps it rubber side down this time.
Yes, indeed. It was a great rally and really good for the I'll go ahead and proceed into the rally weekend. one of the things that was really great about this weekend, more so than the other rallies, was the coverage. They actually had some form or facet of coverage, and I'm going to say that it was on par with ALMS. Because I think it was all web-based, but they had a lot of a lot of interviews, a lot of video, they even did some live stuff from the rally. So I mean, definitely a step in the right direction. It's not a lucrative television contract with the likes of ESPN or maybe Versus, but you know, to have the rally at least live on the internet for people to watch, you know, even if it's just little segmented shows and everything, you know, far and away a lot better than what was happening, which was not really anything, and just kind of catching the results through Tech House and Speed with Bill Wood. So, and then going to the Rally America website and checking out the results there. So this was definitely a step in the right direction, and hopefully something that I really hope they expound upon next year. So
yeah, it was pretty darn cool. I really liked it. I really liked Mr. Wood's way of interviewing and its delivery and his interaction with the drivers. Real laid back and easy. I always enjoy listening on Tech House and Speed, and it was fantastic getting to watch him live. It was a little glitchy this first time through, but they'll hash it out, and I'm really hoping they continue to do this next season for the other rallies. And it'd be nice to see them do this for the Rally Cross, or the, what do they call it, the Global Rally Cross Car Champion X something.
Dun dun dun.
Whatever, I forget the actual moniker, but I hope they do more of this. It is kind of American Le Mans-esque, and yes, I know we've been hammering on American Le Mans series for doing this, for going to a web-based only delivery. But keep in mind that, we're bashing American Le Mans because they're stepping back from having a TV deal, whereas with Rally America, this is a step forward. This is expanding their visibility. This isn't a reduction of their visibility. So they're heading in the right direction.
It,
And
they are.
I'm hoping that we'll see good things come in 2012. I hope they continue on this path.
Well, hopefully, you and I will be at the 100 Acre Wood Rally in
Oh,
February.
heck yeah.
And we'll actually probably either, caravan, convoy style down there, or catch a ride. But I think it will be one of those. I think that we will be able to bring our own unique coverage to Rally America at the 100 Acre Wood next year, if all the chips fall into place. So it'll be a good time, and maybe we can even convince Bill Wood to let us be on TV. We want to be famous. So we'll see what he says about that. But
Yeah, don't count on it.
I talked to him at 100 Acre Wood 2 years ago. I was like, "Oh, I'm a huge fan of yours," and he's just like, "Who are you?" I'm like,
Yeah.
"Yeah, that's that. It's okay. I'm sorry. I did not mean to take up the same oxygen as you." So the guy is quite popular amongst the rally forums with his coverage of the series. But big picture, David Higgins wins the Rally America Championship. It's his third U.S.-based championship in his career, and brings the title back to Subaru.
And he said this was something he mentioned even back at 100 Acre Wood in February this year. That of course he's won this title once before. That was early 2000s, and the competition was not as stiff as it is now. And he had just all kinds of praise for the level of competition, the strength of the drivers, co-drivers that are in the Rally America series right now.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it is a, I mean, because you have people with proper rally pedigrees, not,
Hard to come much better than Antoine Lestage, I tell you that.
yeah, the guy was just absolutely devastating last year, and this year he was still even good this year. So, not to take anything
Oh,
away
yeah.
from not winning the championship. I mean, the guy still put on a hell of a show and drove his ass off, but I mean, just wasn't to be made for the privateer team. Good news to come out of New England Forest Rally was our friends over at Last Ditch Racing, John Cassidy and his co-driver Jennifer Daly, won the Mexico Regional Rally at in New England. Yeah, standing ovation from the paddock crew. They won by 13.4 seconds, and
Nice.
they were well on pace to win the second one as well. But they did have some puncture issues that took them out. I think they won pretty much every stage, but they lost a lot of time on one of the stages with a puncture and a tire change. So.
Well, I tell you what, they did what, three rallies in 4 weeks, including the climb to the clouds. And so to even make the New England Forest Rally, because they had a really, really bad off the week before and tore up the T4. So even just to get the car put back together and make the rally was impressive. And then to perform the way that they did, that's just phenomenal work. Phenomenal work.
Oh, I agree. I agree that they did win the rally coming off of the damage to the T4 at the last one. So, it's great work. Great work, boys. And, hopefully next year we'll get to see more of you, and hopefully you'll come down to the 100 Acre Wood. Don't make me
I tell you
call you
what.
and cry and beg. I'll do that.
I tell you what, Subaru needs to drop some serious money on this team,
Yes.
because given the shoestring they're on, and what they've been able to accomplish is just miraculous. If they had some serious funding, they would be right up there. I firmly believe they'd be right up there challenging for podiums rally after rally.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. So great run by the boys. Good to see a positive result come out after the trials and tribulations. But that concludes the this year's Rally Car Rally America Championship.
Oh, wait.
No, wait. Except for the X Games.
Well, we have one category left.
Oh, we've got Rallycross.
No. The two-wheel drive.
Oh, yes. Comp. How stupid of me.
Our boy, Chris DuPlessis.
Yeah, he won big time in the...
Stuck it to the line cutter.
Yes, he did. He vindicated you, Doug.
Woo!
DuPlessis in the R2 Fiesta destroyed the Scion. His former outfit got embarrassed by him. So
that had to feel good. I know I felt good.
You know what? The Ford Fiesta is probably one of the smallest rally cars on the planet, but also acted as the biggest karma train ever. So take that, you hot dog line-cutting swine. We'll sick the Fords on your ass.
Yeah, Van Way wasn't too far back. He put the other Ford Fiesta there on the podium in third.
But guess what? All of that doesn't matter because Wyatt Knox and the Mazda Speed 3 took the championship.
I tell you what, they were fast. I remember watching them in Salem. They had an amazing rally down there. And so yeah, well deserved championship. However, I do have this to say. If DuPlessis is back in 2012 with that Ford Fiesta, look out.
Championship is his to lose at that point.
Yes. So, not to take anything away from Knox, he had a fantastic season. He had some great rallies in that Mazda. But man, I don't know how you compete with DuPlessis in a good car.
Yeah. You can't. The boy's fast. So that's all there is to it. So, all right. Well, now we have the X Games, right?
Right.
And we guaranteed to see at X Games, we have Ken Block, Travis Pastrana. Obviously, their banter has went all across the internet between each other. The Fiesta will return to take on the Subaru. And we will also have...
Travis does know he's going to have to turn right.
I don't think he does, and we're not going to tell him. We're not going to call and tell him. We're just going to let it happen.
Nice.
Rally's a beautiful thing when it's unscripted. So, and we'll have David Higgins, Antoine Lestage, Travis Hansen, and Dave Mira by default of their championship point standings. So,
if they choose the show.
If they don't have the money,
right?
If they don't have the money, that's one thing. But you know, they have the invitation has been extended. If they reject, then the X Games can go out and select a driver or a person that will fill the gap, if you will, left by the person not showing up. So that's when you get people like your Deegans and stuff like that, even though Deegan was in it last year, but that was because Block and Pastrana were also in it last year. So, you know, I hope to see the Metal Militia car back because it was badass.
I'd like to see what Buddy Lasek could do.
Sean White was tooling around in a Subaru, too, on the BF Goodrich commercials.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that's going to come to fruition or anything. So,
but Buddy has shown that he's money in a sports car. He's been racing in the the Viper Cup and doing pretty darn well. And so I'd love to see him try his hand at rally.
Yes, that would be a fun thing. Would be a fun thing to watch for sure. So I guess we'll see. Time will tell. Well, let's go ahead and move on. Shall we move on to the IRC?
Sure.
All right, because they had a rally as well. They were in the They were in Portugal for the Azores Rally. And this is actually a really good event. There was going to be two rounds to Portugal, but one of them got cut, so we only have the Azores, which took place. And we had Juho Hänninen back in a factory Skoda.
How do you do?
Well, I'll give you a guess, but you only need one. Well, I'll give you three guesses, but you only need one.
Let me guess, he dominated.
Yeah, he won.
Okay,
I don't know.
so he won. Maybe not dominate.
I don't
Okay,
know
I
exactly what
must
the
admit
margin.
I didn't follow the IRC this weekend.
Well, I was following the best I could. It's really a challenge here because we don't the Eurosport that shows all the videos and whatnot does not stream here in the United States. So we kind of rely on YouTube videos and some great people on Twitter to relay us the information. And so it was oh my. It was a great rally. Juho Hänninen did win. So followed and he won rather ha he won. I can't really
Okay.
understand because I'm having a hard time understanding it because the results are in Portuguese.
That's what Google Translate's for.
I know, I don't know. But I don't know exactly how they do this. They've got the time all jacked up, so I need to find something a bit better. Perhaps I should rely on Autosport. Good old trusty Autosport. But Juho Hänninen did win the rally. It was really a Skoda lockout of the podium. Dominating performance by them. I know that Olivier Canel must be pissed because he's just absolutely getting massacred by the Skodas. I mean, the Skodas are far and away the best car in the IRC, and the drivers are also the best drivers. So, Juho Hänninen wins by 42 seconds over Andreas Mikkelsen. Good to see Mikkelsen finally does something in the Skoda. There was much praise leapt onto him. He's in the FIA Academy and all this stuff. It's just been unfulfilling, even starting at Monte Carlo when he wrecked 90 seconds into the rally. It's just been one of those years that's really sucked. He did win, or he did finish second, which is as good as a win for him. Jan Kopecky was third, and then Brian Bouffier fourth, and Patrick Sandell fifth. So good run for the Skodas, obviously, and then Peugeot sticking Bouffier at the fourth position in the and oh my, look at this. Autosport TV decided it was going to add volume as I was talking. Completely.
I hate that
I'm
site.
just like sitting there and it's showing the picture and I'm reading down through the split times and everything. And then all of a sudden, in the DTM, I was like, what? What the hell just happened there? So Sandell fifth. So really, it was a Skoda lockout. Well done for the Skoda boys. And really, they've been the class of the IRC field. That does put Juho Hänninen back in the championship lead. After he's been kind of hit or miss on these rallies this year, so that puts him back in the championship lead with 83 points. Brienne is now second for Peugeot with 79 points. Kopecky's third, Loy fourth, and Neuville fifth. So looking like it's coming down to about a four-steed race here with Hänninen, Bouffier, Kopecky, and Loy. So all within about 13 points of each other. As far as the manufacturers go, Skoda, I mean, really, it's 229 to 181. They did extend the lead this weekend. So I don't really foresee any drastic changes to the Constructors' Championship as we progress into the Czech Republic. Obviously, Skoda's home race, so it's going to be a big, it's going to be a big. Big weekend for Skoda for sure. So, and now moving on, we're done with the IRC. I can't wait for the Czech Republic, by the way. Did I mention that? So that's going to be a good rally. That's going to be a good
Well, that's because they play hard, right?
Yeah. Well, that's usually it's Croatia.
Oh, it's Croatia. Okay. Okay.
We play hard.
I got my Eastern Bloc places all mixed up.
It happens. It happens. Yeah. But on to the WRC, we did have one story come out. I would get into the Volkswagen Junior drivers, but I'm not overly hip or keen or really know what's going on with that because I just don't know. I just don't. So I'm going to admit it. That is a shortcoming for me. But we will have some WRC rumors, and albeit maybe a big picture look at the WRC, but some rather happy news coming about out of the WRC here the last few days, as Subaru has announced, well, Subaru hasn't announced anything, but Subaru has announced...
I was going to say, careful here.
Yeah, but they have announced that there is going to be changes within their car lineup. For the longest time, the Subaru Impreza has, or the WRX and subsequent STI have been kind of bastardized sports models of the Impreza. Now, heading forward, not necessarily next year, I think they were plotting about 2014, the Subaru WRX will be its own model. So you'll have the Impreza, and then you'll have the WRX. So you'll have the Subaru WRX. That's it. So with that, there are some key changes coming about this car anyways that lend credence to believe that a return to the WRC is, in fact, in the cards at Subaru. Granted, this is all speculation in terms of the dimensions. Subaru hasn't come out and said, well, we're going to do it exactly like this. This is people from within the company speaking actually to Motor Trend. And they came out and said that, well, we're going to shorten the wheelbase on the WRX, and we're going to give it, here's the crucial point, a 1.6-liter turbo.
Well, there you are then, eh?
That's a pretty good indication.
DRE spec, isn't it?
Yeah, that is the 1.6 fits into the... Well, I wouldn't necessarily call it the global engine because we've seen how far that went. WRC is the only one who's adopted it to a point. But so the WRC formula calls for a shorter S2000 chassis, a 1.6-liter turbo. Both have been... that source that was speaking to Motor Trend has said that those will, they didn't necessarily come out and say S2000 chassis, but shorter chassis would lead one to believe that it would be an S2000 with a 1.6-liter turbo, with the full impression that they are going to join the WRC. Now, there's a couple other pieces that fit into the puzzle that make it kind of even more interesting, and that is Toyota. A lot of people may or may not know that Subaru has very close ties with Toyota. Actually, if you go up to the plant, my hometown in Indiana, they build both Subaru and Toyota out of the same plant. So they have Subaru, like Foresters and stuff like that, that come out of that plant, as well as certain Toyota models as well. So they really use the same kinds of...
they have a working relationship.
Yes. So what I'm thinking is, before Subaru was tied with ProDrive, because they don't have a European base where they can operate a race team out of, so they went with ProDrive. My thinking is Toyota wanted to get back into WRC, but I don't think they're going to do it as a manufacturer. Rather, I think that they're going to incorporate Toyota people and Toyota facilities that are already based in Cologne as the working base for the Subaru team once it materializes, if in fact it materializes. So I think that would be the base of operations. I think that this has real potential to finally be kind of coming into the fold here. Because if you remember when we talked about Volkswagen coming into WRC, it was year after year of rumor, speculation. It's going to be off this car. It's going to be off this car. It's going to be, you know, we're going to announce it here. We're going to announce it there. And finally they announced it and said that they're going to do it. So I really think that Subaru, I really think there is some momentum behind the rumors and the sources, quotations there. This source is what he's saying. I for sure think that there's a really good chance that Subaru is finally going to make their return to the WRC.
You know, that really sounds like a very plausible scenario you laid out with Subaru providing the car and joining with Toyota providing some of the technical know-how, the mechanical and the racecraft expertise that Subaru probably doesn't have in Europe any longer with their long absence from the WRC. So, you know, obviously Toyota is probably still cringing a little bit from their just insane expenditure from Formula One. This might be an easy way for them to get back into the global motorsport scene without having to spend just in, you know, unspeakable millions of dollars to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I like that that idea. I think it's a win-win.
Mm-hmm.
Now the next question is, of course, who are they going to hire as a driver?
Ugh, can't even get into that because
do they bring Mr. Solberg back?
Not if he's already associated with Volkswagen.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have a hard time seeing that. I mean, I know a lot of diehards and old-school fans would love to see a reunion. Weitzel. But
he doesn't matter.
But, you know, I think they really should go after someone up and coming.
Yeah. I think they should definitely look at snagging some up-and-coming drivers. And, you know, you really don't know what the lay of the land, if you will be in 2014, 2015 when they come online. And, you know, I would really like it, and I think this would be great, is if Subaru did a lot like what Porsche did for their Le Mans program, snip out a teaser. Put something out. You know, don't necessarily come out and show your car or do that, but throw out a teaser video. Show the historic Subaru. Show the McRae's, the Solberg, the Burns, all that. Show them. And then just put, you know, coming to the WRC in 2014. And, I mean, that right there would build – I mean, it would be huge. I mean, it would be a shot in the arm for the WRC. It would be awesome for Subaru because, you know, obviously I'm a YouTube video freak, so I'll watch it all day, every day. And you know, it's just one of those things where I think, you know, you could really build some hype around the program. Not that they really need to, because once people hear Subaru is coming back to the WRC, it's going to be everywhere. But you know, I think it's a good idea, because if you looked at what they've done here recently, they're still the most popular rally car used by drivers.
Mm-hmm.
They're all over the place. They've been working on a really, in my opinion, and no offense to the people, the project managers who've been working on it, but the R4 Subarus are really fruitless, to be honest. They have, you know, they're made to compete against the S2000 cars. There's regulations that, you know, were put in place and everything that, you know, you just can't, the car can't be competitive against the S2000. I don't care what anybody tells me. I've heard people come on and say, oh yeah, it's you know, this is going to make it leaps and bounds better, yada, yada, yada. We'll be able to run with them, yada, yada, yada. And what happens? I see no Subaru cars challenging for even podiums in the IRC.
Yeah.
They need to just go and run with it. I mean, get in the WRC. That's where things are becoming road relevant. Just do it.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that when you're talking about shrinking up the wheelbase and also the, you know, the diminishment of the engine going to the 1.6 liter turbo. That is exactly where the automotive industry is headed right now. Well, look at the Fiesta, for example. You know, that type of a smaller footprint, both carbon footprint and physical footprint, that's where the modern car is headed. That's what people are buying, and so it makes sense to develop a rally version of those cars. I mean, just because people are thinking of getting something more fuel efficient, that doesn't negate the built-in desire that we have as humans to run fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's you know, whether it was on our feet, on a bike, on a horse, or in a car, we like to go fast, period. And so, you know, having a small car doesn't mean that you can't go out and have fun and be sporty. And, of course, rally is the perfect venue for demonstrating that for your for your product. Of course, Mini did that with extreme success with the original Mini, not the BMW thing. But, you know, the original Mini Cooper, you know, it was a brilliant rally car, and it got a lot of notoriety as a rally car.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Subaru is heading in the right direction. It's the right way of thinking about what the next iteration of the Impreza should be.
I agree. And the Impreza will be the car is going to be if once it gets out there, I mean, it's just going to be awesome. So, all right. Well, I guess.
And our and our rallies here, you know, down at the 100 Acre Wood, will be even more of a Subaru love fest. You know, I'm surprised they let us drive around Dent County down there in anything other than a Subaru.
Yeah, I know. It's like
you're not Subaru. You don't belong on these roads.
I know, right? Mazda, the hell's that? Get out of these parts, boy. What?
You ain't from around here.
You ain't from around here, are you? Yeah, it'll be good though. So I'll be excited.
Anything else for rally?
That's gonna be it for rally, and now we will get into IndyCar. And in the realm of IndyCar this week, anyways, we've got very little. In fact, for the actual true news, it'd be interesting to see how some of these indie-only podcasts drag it out for an hour or so. Perhaps we
could.
But
yeah,
it's slow.
For the iZod IndyCar series, the news has been kind of slow this week.
Mm-hmm.
There's only been a couple of things. Really, most of the fun stuff's been, well, fun. Depends on your point of view.
Yeah.
Most of the, let me say, interesting things have been happening in Firestone Indy Lights. And, of course, there's always that old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. These are certainly interesting times. So, anyway, before we move into Firestone Indy Lights, the one bit of news, sort of news, not too surprising news, that came out today is that AJ Foyt Racing has committed to Honda Performance Development for their engines in 2012, and they're looking to add a second car. Don't know if that's going to happen full-time in 2012 or not. Wasn't especially clear.
Yeah.
But they're looking to add a second program.
Well, we know for a fact that they're looking at it for Bruno.
Yes.
Which one was it? Was it Larry?
Larry Foyt. Yeah.
Yeah. Was he? Yeah. He told us at Indianapolis after that whole debacle went down that they were, the ABC Supply and everybody on that team were pushing like hell to get a second full-time car for next year for Bruno.
Oh yeah.
So because of the way he was railed this year. Yeah. Not surprising at all that they went to Honda. Like you said. But what it really is kind of interesting is coming out is people are now posturing for 2012. Lots of announcements are supposedly upcoming for engine suppliers.
It's going to be an interesting little chess match.
Mm-hmm.
Spike was tweeting this live as it happened. He was listening into the teleconference. And the gentleman that was there representing Eric Berkman was mentioning that it was going to be quite the chess match.
Mm-hmm.
as we move forward into 2012 with who picks what engine manufacturer.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, it will be interesting.
Well, Robin Miller said that he thought, or he had heard, that Andretti was going to go to Chevrolet power. And that Penske would be Chevrolet power. And that Ganassi and some other teams are going to come into the fold, including even KV Racing, who supposedly was signed on to run the Judds with the Lotus.
I was really surprised when I read that.
Yeah, I was dumbfounded.
Yeah, I thought KV would be an absolute lock for the Judd engine.
Mm-hmm.
That's being, I guess, in part spec'd out and financed by Lotus.
Yeah, the Lotus Judd engine, if you will.
Right.
To be honest with you, I don't see Andretti going to Chevrolet. I don't see it.
I don't know. Andretti was a Honda fanboy and favorite child for quite a while, and ran the ARX in the American Le Mans series, the Acura prototype.
Yeah.
But when Honda dumped Andretti for DeFerrin, effectively shutting down Andretti's ALMS program, I wonder how much love is still left.
I'd have to say, well, from my standpoint, I'm thinking Andretti has been on the ropes this year. He's put on some solid performances, won races that he's won before, but he needs to go with a true kind of thing. He needs to stick with Honda because
it's got to work both ways. A team can't just say, I want to run your engine.
Mm-hmm.
Manufacturer has to accept the team as well. It's got to be a mutual agreement.
Yeah, but the engine manufacturer will accept the cash when it goes across the table.
No, not necessarily. Honda said they are only going to fund about 10 engines, and I think...
Okay, so you've... But again, you've eliminated Penske and Ganassi because they're already signed to engines. Ganassi signed to Honda, and Penske's gotten to Chevrolet. So who else is left in the paddock to win?
Ganassi has 4.
Yes.
Foyt will have 2, so I'll have 1 for Indy.
So there's 6.
There's only 4 left.
Give them to the Andretti cars.
Well, and they're talking about... they're talking about KV.
I know, but again,
that's 3 right there.
I don't know if it's 3 if they run. Well, it depends on what they do.
2 or 3.
Yeah, 2 or 3. I'm thinking that Andretti has to be Honda. I mean, if I'm wrong, I'll be the first to come out and say bad prediction. But I cannot think that KV and that whole unless Lotus is jumping ship from KV, I don't see how they don't run the Judd. I just don't see it.
You know, that's just it.
It's mind-boggling.
This rumor of KV running the Hondas, you're right. That immediately brings up the notion, well, all right, does that mean then that Lotus is going to move to another team?
I mean, maybe Newman Haas? I don't know.
That would be cool, wouldn't it?
Well,
hang on, because Newman Haas has been rumored to be in talks with Judd.
Interesting.
And so, that really could fit together really, really well.
Maybe Lotus sees what KV's done this year and last year. They're just
they're tired of buying front wings.
Yeah, right. Like, I don't think we can afford to run with you.
As much of a Sato fanboy as I am, and I really do like Bezo.
Mm-hmm.
That first year when he was with HVM, I really didn't think much of it.
Yeah.
The following year, I saw improvement. He grew on me. Got to meet him at some of the Indy Downforce events, and really took a liking to EJ. Really top notch, super fun person. But man, as fast as he is, he's still reckless.
Mm-hmm.
And Sato, as fast as he is, he's still reckless. And that takes a big toll on the budget, at the end of the year.
Yep.
You'll look at the mistakes that Sato made at Toronto, but also at Iowa. He was all set easily for a top five, if not a podium finish at Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And he wipes out.
It happens.
It does. But it just seems to happen to Sato.
Yeah.
All too often.
And I went to bat for them at the beginning of the year, big time, saying that I thought that they both had earned the right to drive again.
Absolutely, I was right there with you.
So.
I'm still fanboys of both. I will freely admit it, but I have to look at the situation clearly and rationally. And man, if I were Lotus, I'd be looking at that squad thinking, I'm not getting real good exposure with this.
Oh, you're getting great TV time, but for all the wrong reasons.
Yes, that's it exactly. Not press is good press, despite the saying. So, I really would not be surprised to see Lotus move over to Newman Haas and Newman Haas run the Judds, mm-hmm. and then KV run the Hondas. I gotta think that Kalkoven and Vassar are just frantically running around right now, trying to drum up 2012 sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it isn't on their plate already, it needs to be, right now.
Yeah. Well, I guess we shall see. My money right now is that Honda will run with Andretti. So take it or leave it. Give me an over/under, but I'm predicting that will be the case.
I'm gonna say that they're gonna go with Chevy, and I would give you 3-2 odds.
All right. Well, I like that. I can play on those. So, all right. Well, this weekend we are heading to our last leg of our Canadian tour. We're going to be at Edmonton. It's, previously pretty boring track, but this year we have the new Edmonton layout. And as we've discussed when it was first announced a few months ago, we're really looking forward to this race. The new track layout looks really good, really fast. But Alex Tagliani seems to think that we're going to have more accidents this week, much like we had in Toronto with the Crash Fest, the demo derby, the attempt at trying to run a proper motor race because it was, in fact, not a proper motor race. And now Tagliani's expecting much the same. But, Doug, unless they just start turning each other for no reason, I don't see how this track layout can usher in that kind of contact.
Well, it's not necessarily the track layout itself
mm-hmm.
that's going to do this, all right? I tend to agree with Tagliani, and I brought this up a little bit last time or on our last podcast, in that the big problem here is that we're looking at a situation, an environment where in Toronto the race officials completely swallowed the whistle.
Mm-hmm.
It was a free-for-all. There were no repercussions for actions, at least not no repercussions from race control.
Yeah.
Well, except for poor Mike Conway. You'll admit he did deserve an avoidable contact penalty.
Well, yeah, he just drove right into the back of him.
Yeah, and he admitted it. But to give him a penalty and no one else, are you serious?
Oh, yeah, they're very serious.
I guess.
But it's none of your business.
Yeah, apparently. But no, so I think that it's not so much the circuit. The circuit looks fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that this is a much improved circuit for a number of reasons. But the reason why Tagliani is right isn't because of the circuit itself, but because of the culture and the environment that IndyCar has fostered
mm-hmm.
with their ineffective and inconsistent officiating.
I
They're,
agree.
you're going to have people overly aggressive, dive bombing corners, thinking they've got a front wing in, so that means the corner's theirs. It isn't.
It isn't.
It isn't.
I know you're harking at me, and I'm just going to shoot you down, and I'm going to tell you you're fired because I know what you're getting at, and frankly, I don't care.
Yeah, we went through all this last week. Other people who are familiar with road racing will agree with me. And,
okay. And all the idiots, I guess, will agree with me.
Exactly.
You're a fool. You're freaking fired for being the Lord of... Forget Lord of Dance. You are now Lord of Douche.
Oh, there. Okay. I'll put that on my business card.
Oh, you should. That'd be awesome. In fact, I will take care... I will take care of business cards from here on out, just so I can make sure that that goes.
So, for those of you who haven't seen the new layout, go to our site, and in the search bar there, just type in Edmonton layout. Mike posted an article a while back, once beginning of the year, when we heard about what the new layout was going to be like. And he had a graphic with all the turns pointed out and laid out and such like that, and that nice little graphic. So
he does good work with PowerPoints.
He does, doggone it. Brilliant stuff. But anyway, so you know, here's the deal. The race will start on the runway that they had not used previously, and it will run into it's super super long. What I forget the exact length of that stretch, but it's one of the longest straightaways on the circuit. I mean, even longer than straights at Indy. They're going to have some mad speed coming down at turn one. It's going to be a hard braking zone. There's a lot of runoff down there. So if somebody, you know, just blows the corner, they've got places to go. But, you know, that's one place where I think you're going to see a ton of accidents. People trying to outbrake one another, being overly ambitious, thinking they've got the corner. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. And there's just going to be tons of carbon fiber spread all over the place. Now, turn five, I don't think will be as messy. You'll have a nice little run down there, but you know, there I think your move really is on the outside of turn five, unless you can really get up alongside somebody. I think really the move there is to stay alongside someone, stay in contact with them in turn five on their outside, and then take them as you're on the inside of turn six.
Yeah,
I think that's maybe what you'll see play out. You know, that whole 5, 6, 7, 8 complex will be really interesting to see if people are actually able to go side by side through that. You could see some really interesting racing. Depends on how bad the marbles get. It is a narrow bit of track, though. That's the part of the track, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's the part that you would remember from previous years. It's the purpose-built road course portion of the track. So it's not the super broad, wide runway. It's, you know, it's more road width. And then some more twisty bits, 9, 10, 11. 11, a nice high-speed corner. And then that leads into 12, which takes you back onto the runway down to the hairpin at 13. 13, you're going to see a lot more dive bombing. You're going to see people try, well, like at the hairpin at Long Beach, a little bit. You know, you certainly don't have the same run up to that hairpin at Long Beach that you will at Edmonton. But you're going to have people really trying to push the issue right there. And so you're going to see a lot more carbon fiber there. And so turn one, turn 13 at opposite ends of the runway, that's where you're going to see most of the mayhem. And I agree with tags, unless something really, really changes with the way that the race is officiated. Now you're going to see Toronto all over again.
Well, there you have it, a drunken virtual lap with Doug.
Woo!
The last guy I'd get into a race car with. Just kidding.
No, that's a smart thing.
Because he uses the walls.
No. I don't
You
use
have been found guilty.
Not I don't use the walls.
Phil
I
doesn't
time lie. Come in contact with the walls.
Mm.
Try not to use them.
Lies.
I will use Mr. Olemeyer's car on occasion.
Oh, now that's just dirty.
That's
if you do that to me when I move out there and we play Gran Turismo, please believe that I'm just going to swiftly turn and kick you square in the junk. It's going to happen, and it's going to be so fast and furious that you won't even have time to react. You won't even know what hit you if that's what happens. No, it's my ultimate goal. Once I get out there to get you on iRacing, I'll let you take some laps in an old dad's rig here, and you can.
I fully admit I suck.
Oh, there it is, finally.
Yeah,
and to think that you gave us a whole week of BS.
No. I suck at racing. I just don't suck quite as bad as Mr. Olemeyer. So.
Oh, I will be waiting for him to come on shift, and that news will be relayed.
Yeah,
and you probably will relay it before me because
oh yeah, he already
knows.
He already knows my thoughts on that.
So I try
I
to
don't
get
care
him.
How bad I suck, so long as I don't suck as bad as him.
Oh, nice. Well, I will dominate you both. Actually, probably not. The iRacing Star Mazda Championship closes out at Spa, and I'm three solid seconds off the pace. So need to find some speed.
Flat out through Eau Rouge, man.
Oh, I do. Balls to the wall through that part. And it's fun because you can do it with little to no repercussion. So all that other part where you actually have to hit the brakes and turn and actually know how to race, yeah, I'm not very good at that. I almost won at Watkins Glen yesterday. Almost. I biffed it. I pushed too hard. I don't know any driver. I tried to be Senna by going faster and faster and faster and turned into, that was it. My story ends there because
you turn into Bedwar.
Well, I went from 12. I went from 12 sec. I was down 12 seconds to the leader, with about 6 laps to go, and then all of a sudden I'm only down 8 seconds, and I'm like, oh, what happened? So I push harder and I close it down to 6 seconds, and I'm like, oh, old dad's catching up. I was like, I got a shot at winning this thing, and then all of a sudden it was just. Rub, and like I barely touched the Armco, and the suspension just bent. And the guy who was behind me, who ended up finishing second, finished 7/10 behind the leader, and I was faster than him by about 7/10. Mm. So I would have, and please believe that if I was in a dogfight with the leader, I would have overtaken him because I'm like Lewis Hamilton. I speak gangster, and I'm an awesome overtaker. G-Dog, yo.
Or are you like Briscoe?
Yeah, Briscoe more like it. Actually, I was more like a Will Power.
But...
because last year, Will Power, every time he was about to win on an oval, rub ever so gently on the wall, and then he was done.
Yeah.
So I will put it more like that. Plus, it makes me actually sounds like I have more credibility. So, you know, there it
well,
is.
I
Will Power.
Say one more I do want to say one more thing about the track layout
All
at
right.
Edmonton. One of the things that really makes this a big improvement, and it has nothing to do with the turn allocations themselves or the geometry, but the fact that they've completely closed down the runway they're using for the circuit. And so the other runway will be able to remain open year-round, and the circuit itself will be available for racing year-round. And so they'll have a permanent racing airport facility. Best of both worlds. This means that they'll not only be able to have the IndyCar race there, of course, but also be able to host a lot of other racing events there as well. Speaking with Mike Cockrell at the beginning of the year, he had mentioned even the prospect of having some ice racing out there. Now, how cool would that be?
Badass.
Heck yeah. And with all the taxiways, it really opens itself up to a lot of different geometries you could potentially run and still stay clear of the active runway. So this is a fantastic change for Edmonton. Best of all is the new promoter, the new race promoter, Octane Motorsports Events. Someone who actually knows what they're doing when it comes to promoting a motorsports event in Canada. Of course, they're the ones that promote the Formula One, the Canadian Grand Prix in Montreal. So, this is really good news for the event, and I think Octane being on board, combined with the new layout, specifically with the fact that you can have the primary runway remain open year round without having to do a bunch of changing, that really helps the longevity of the IndyCar event.
I agree. Well, we've already kind of previewed it, but let's just go ahead and get into some predictions. And I'm going to say that while I want to say Dario because you got to strike while the iron's hot, I'm going to have to say that Will Power gets my vote because I think now that he's raging mad and in his little Aussie tizzies, I think that he's going to be a man on a mission this weekend, and it will probably take another punt from Dario to actually upstage him. So I'm going to go with Will Power winning in Edmonton.
I'm going to agree with you. I think he will. He has tapped into the dark side. He will take his anger and his hate and channel it into his car, and he will be unstoppable.
Well, I mean, another thing, he has to strike back this weekend.
Oh,
The
absolutely.
championship. I mean, the championship is really in doubt now, and if he has any chance or any want, need, or desire of claiming said championship, he has to strike back.
Yeah.
And
And I think Dario showed him, Dario and Briscoe showed him the way. If he has an opportunity to bump and run, IndyCar has already made it clear that they're going to say no harm, no foul for the person behind.
Yeah, well, you got to be careful though, because I mean,
It's a little dodgier in an open wheel car.
well, I mean, it's
But
one of
he's
those
got
things.
to understand that he's going to take more risks now than he would have otherwise.
Well, he will, and I'm not speaking from the standpoint of, the fragile car. I'm saying that it's much like an MMA fight where or a basketball or any kind of stick and ball sport. You don't want to leave it in the judge's hands. If you come out and clobber somebody and expect no penalty because no penalty had been issued previously, you need to be careful with that. I think for Willpower, I think the best thing that he needs to do is just do what he does, and that is qualify up front, typically.
And then run away from everybody.
Yeah, and you're right, run away from everybody. Because if he gets into the habit of bumping or running, who's to say the IndyCar, we've already seen they have real serious credibility issues, and half the people don't know what the hell they're doing. So, you don't want to put it in the hands where people are saying, well, I thought we were going to fix this penalty issue, and now you've bumped Dario and spun him, and then now you've gotten yourself a drive-through penalty for avoidable contact because they feel as though they have some kind of, point to prove, if you will.
Right.
Coming from Toronto. So I would say, while the opportunity to, if it's a close incident like it was in Toronto with Dario and Will, I would say that he's going to get away with it. But what I am going to say is that he needs to not take that route because you don't want to put it in race control's hands because they've already proven they're wild cards. You don't know what the hell they're going to say.
Good point.
So
Good
you
point.
know, just do what you do, qualify on first, and run away with the race, and then be like, "Ha-ha, there it is." But I'm afraid that if you put it into race control's hands this weekend after what happened two weekends ago, you're taking an awfully big chance, and with the championship in the balance, I don't think that you can take that particular chance. there are other places where you can take chances, that not being one of them. Because if you get a drive-through penalty and then you get punted again by, say, Tagliani or you know, Paul Tracy, you're out. Your title is damn near done at that point.
Yep.
Because, I mean, Dario's been running.
It's on the verge right now.
Oh, yeah, you're on the verge of losing it right now. And, you know, if you put yourself in a position and you get a drive-through penalty and you get shifted to the back and then you get punted, you're done. It comes down to a two-horse race between Franchitti and Dixon, and Franchitti's so far ahead at this point it doesn't even matter. So it would take a miracle of God for him to lose the championship, which a lot of people would like to see. Me not being one of them, I like to see Dario winning, and I like to see him winning championships, not because he wins all the time and not because he's a Ganassi driver, but just because my like of Dario comes from his respect. He respects open wheel racing. He's a student of open wheel racing. He respects
that I will
the
give
records,
him.
And he's humbled every time he breaks one of these records. That is mad props in my book.
I will give him that. He has genuine respect and reverence for the sport and the history of the sport. What has turned me off, and I started out being a huge, huge Dario fan. What has turned me off recently has been the whinging, to borrow a term from Power. But you know, the term sore winner comes to mind quite often when I see him in the, you know, in his post-race interviews. I'm like, oh, really? This is not the place to come out with these statements. You know, when you're in victory lane, you should be, yay us, I have a great team, Target is a great sponsor, we won the day, hooray. You know, that's not your opportunity to cut down the people that you just beat. And so I give him you know, ups for his respect and reverence for the sport and the history. But you know, I give him thumbs down for the way he handles himself in victory lane.
That's because you've never been a winner before, Doug.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. You've never.
That's went. How it's going to be. I
you
see
don't know.
I see where this is going now.
Oh, I'm kidding. I guess that means that I am now uninvited to any barbecues at the Patrick Ranch. Well done.
Blow shit update denied.
Yeah, nice. Actually, I probably won't even be there for blow the shit up day because I, in fact, will probably have my own blow stuff up day. My parents have said that they're coming in with a hefty sum of money over the 4th next year, which brings up my prospects of blowing my own stuff up, which I thought with unlimited funds I did a fantastic job at this year.
Well, you know, quick aside, to give context to what we're talking about, here at the Patterson Ranch, we have our annual blow stuff up day, for our 4th of July celebration, where we have a big barbecue, invite people over and burn a lot of black powder and, well, blow stuff up. It's a great time. I mean, what's more fun in rural Missouri than alcohol and black powder? I mean, the two things were meant to go together.
Indeed. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Good times, good times.
Well, let's just go ahead. We've made our predictions, and Mike's not here to defend himself, so I don't care. He'll probably pick Will Power because he's a fanboy.
Well, it's, as we said, it's the right prediction.
You don't know what's right and wrong.
You picked him!
I know. You picked him because I picked him.
No, well, anyway, let's move on.
Let's do that. And wow.
Before we get into fire, first any lights,
okay.
Real quick, because the schedule, especially for Edmonton, with it being off the schedule and then back on the schedule, came so late. Star Mazda and USF 2000 will not be at Edmonton. Star Mazda will be racing with the American Le Mans Series at Mosport. So it should be a very, very interesting weekend. You can You can, of course, keep track of the action there in the Star Mazda series. Go to starmazda.com, and you'll see a link there for live timing. And their live timing app works really well, both mobile and desktop browser versions work extremely well. Back on the road courses, we'll see if Sage Karam and the Andretti Autosport team can continue with the momentum they found on the ovals. USF 2000 won't be in action until mid-Ohio in early August. So now the soap opera that is the Firestone Indy Lights series.
As the world turns.
Boy, that's what it seems like. It really does. O2 Racing Technology filed a protest to the suspension that was given to the team and to team owner Mark Olson for their actions at Milwaukee. The team and owner were suspended not just for the remainder of this year, but for the entirety of next year as well. They're able to reapply for a license and membership on January 1st, 2013. Their suspension lasts through December 31st, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it effectively puts them out of the game for a season and a half, well, darn near two seasons, given how early into 2011 this all went down. So, of course, Mark Olson filed an appeal disputing the claims that he had encouraged other team owners to breach contracts with IndyCar. The league in that hearing upheld its original penalty, enforcing the suspension of entrant license O2 Racing Technology and membership of Mr. Mark Olson until December 31st, 2012. And they in the IndyCar release, they stated the same rules that they stated in their previous release, actions threatening the integrity of IndyCar. So shouldn't we suspend Mr. Barnhart?
We should suspend IndyCar, yeah.
Anyway, IndyCar, Firestone Indy Lights, and or orderly conduct of an event. Conducting, creating adverse notoriety with respect to IndyCar, Firestone Indy Lights, or an event. That one, creating adverse notoriety, that's the one that maybe they can leverage because of how vocal O2 Racing Technology was about how upset they were with the way things were being handled.
They have a right.
I agree with that. I understand why they're upset. They had a right to be upset. And being vocal about that upset or about their about that, they have that right. And, well, IndyCar, it's a private entity, and they have the right to apply, you know, what in the rule book is Rule 2.11c, you know, thou shalt not conduct creating adverse notoriety.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, don't speak ill of IndyCar. Is what that amounts to. And you know they did. They called IndyCar out for some things they felt were wrong. But anyway, the other rules that they leveled against them as being transgressions. So they violated Rule Number 9.3a, attempting to or engaging in unsportsmanlike conduct or conduct detrimental to racing, IndyCar and or Indy or Firestone Indy Lights.
Mm-hmm.
And Section 14 of the entry form, engaging in tactics that would disrupt or delay events. What they did is they said, this sucks, we're not playing, and pulled their car off the grid.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't interfere with the conduct of the event.
No,
the event still went on.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's just it went on without them. So I can see them applying the second rule, their conduct creating a verse notoriety. The others though are a little dodgy, especially when part of the IndyCar organization's claim was that, quote, Olson was suspended for attempting to impede the conduct of an event by encouraging others to breach your contracts with IndyCar and withdraw from the David Hobbs 100. The thing is, Mark Olson has claimed from the get-go that this is not, in fact, what they did. The following release after their hearing and IndyCar ruled that the suspension to be upheld, they replied with especially with respect to the encouraging team owners to boycott, quote, this allegation against Olson was simply false, leading to an appeal by O2 Racing Technology and Olson of the penalty and a hearing held by IndyCar. This all happened on July 14th. At the hearing, IndyCar admitted that it had conducted an investigation and failed to find a single person who claimed to have been encouraged to boycott the Milwaukee event by Olson. However, IndyCar maintained that the burden rested on Olson to prove a negative, i.e. that Olson did not encourage boycott. Despite Olson's testimony to his innocence and personal team owner letters supporting Olson's position. So other team owners issuing letters of support for Mr. Olson. IndyCar denied the appeal and ruled that there was insufficient evidence to reverse penalty and suspension.
Which is absolutely garbage.
Well, it smacks of being guilty until proven innocent, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And you know, I know this isn't a court of law. This is a private entity, and they can damn well do what they want. However, if you're going to have these sorts of grievance hearings and procedures, you have to go at it with the notion of innocent until proven guilty. And in fact, Will Phillips, when I talked to him at Milwaukee, or I'm sorry, at Iowa, had mentioned that one of the reasons why Sam Schmidt Motorsports was not penalized at Indianapolis because of their tainted or out of spec gearbox oil was because they couldn't bring viable evidence against the team that there was some question as to the handling of that oil. There is a gap, I guess, in the chain of possession of the sample that they took. So they said, well, we can't prove anything, so we can't level the penalty. This seems just the opposite of that particular statement. And, you know, it's really, really disheartening to see this type of thing happen. You know, there's been some talk about whether O2 Racing Technology was you know, short on cash. Dempsey mentioned that you know, they are all on a tight leash financially. And there is speculation, well, they ran out of money and this was how they could exit and save face. I don't know that I buy that. I really don't. You know, if you're short on cash, and you say, I'm short on cash, I can't participate anymore. It happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see teams do that all the time in a variety of different motorsports. Well, for example, Panther. Said that, saying, you know what, we can't afford this anymore. We're just going to bow out.
Mm-hmm.
That was Panther Racing, you know. So, you know, I don't buy that they were trying to save face type of argument. I believe that they really had a and still do have a genuine grievance against IndyCar in the way that the races and especially the technical inspections were officiated.
Mm-hmm.
IndyCar has admitted there's changes they need to make to how the technical inspection process is done. Mr. Phillips was very forthcoming with us at Iowa with respect to that, and that they were making changes and becoming more transparent initially to the teams, in that it would be a slow process changing things, seeing what worked and what didn't. What concerns me, though, isn't Mr. Phillips, but a lot of the other people involved in IndyCar race control and with the whole race operations side of the equation. You know, it really, really has the appearance right now that IndyCar is playing favorites and is vengeful against those who would cross them. That is not what an official needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
An official needs to look at rules clearly, dispassionately, and rationally, and make the best decision at the time with the information at hand, and go. If you find out later that your information was wrong, you need to rescind.
Mm-hmm.
Say, you know what, with in light of new information, you know, you need to be humble enough to say, we have new data that, I mean, you know, we revise our ruling. But you need to do it clearly, dispassionately, and most importantly, transparently. That is the big thing missing right now. I'm not going to say one way or the other whether, you know, IndyCar does indeed play favorites or not.
Mm-hmm.
I have no data, so I feign no hypothesis. But, you know, the thing is, all this stuff is kind of happening in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening behind closed doors, and because of that, the public is led to use their imagination. As I've mentioned before, we have very dark and evil imaginations. We imagine the absolute worst is happening when we have no information given to us. And so if IndyCar really wants to kind of escape this building perception of favoritism and inconsistency and whatnot else, then it really needs to be incredibly open right now. It needs to throw the doors wide to what's happening, make decisions quickly, transparently, and dispassionately.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't appear that that's happening right now. I don't know if they are or not, but it doesn't have that appearance.
Hmm.
Okay, sorry, rant over.
All right.
Well, I know that was long.
We'll just go ahead and take us through the rest of it then.
Okay, we do have a couple new drivers. On a positive note, for Firestone and Lights, I'm going to mispronounce this name, I know, and I apologize. But Tyler Duick? Duick?
Yeah.
D-U-E-C-K. I tried and tried and tried to find a pronunciation of this and failed. But he's going to be racing for a new team headed by David Gorey. I hope I pronounced that right. Gorey Multisport is fielding Tyler in the Edmonton races this weekend, and they're trying to, as I understand, they're trying to maybe put something together at least part time for 2012. Ms. Gorey was a race engineer on the Elf Racing machine, number 55 machine. Back in 2009, that ran Rodrigo Barbosa, that they had nicknamed Captain Slow.
Nice.
But anyway, so he has some experience as a race engineer in Firestone and Indy Lights, and he's coming over as a race as a team owner. And Tyler has been out of the cockpit in 2011. but has a lot of Formula Car experience. He raced Formula Renault, the 2.0 series,
mm-hmm.
in 2008, 2009, and Formula 3 last year, all there in Italy. So running some really insane and historic road courses. So, you know, he's not been tootling around some backwater, you know, road course cut out of some dirt hill. He's been racing some genuine tracks, some old school tracks. In 2007, he was in the Skip Barber National series and had pretty good success throughout. He ended up with a race win, fastest lap, and fifth in the championship in 2009 in Formula Renault 2.0. Last year, not so good. He also does have some experience in LMP2.
Mm.
He has some experience running the prototypes. So we'll see how Tyler does this weekend. Another exciting addition for the Edmonton race is hometown boy, Stefan Radzinski, whom we had the pleasure of speaking with earlier in the week. Sunday night, I spoke with him, and I think I got our conversation posted Sunday late night. Most of you might have seen it on Monday, but anyway, he's going to be racing for Davey Hamilton Racing, with a lot of help from some from Edmonton local entities as well as Octane Motorsports Events. Mr. Radzinski, he won a regional scholarship, a full scholarship in the Skip Barber Regional Series due to his outstanding performance in the Skip Barber Karting Shootout last year. He had been racing in the Ontario Formula Ford Championships the last couple of years, doing quite well. He's third in the championship right now in the Skip Barber Summer Series. So, you know, he knows how to maneuver a Formula car, and his test at Putnam Park went very well, from what I understand. So it'll be interesting to see what he does in Edmonton. Of course, the Davey Hamilton Racing machine isn't necessarily the best machine to be in at a road course. You know, they can do some great stuff in on an oval, but road courses is not their strong suit. But it is the strong suit of Stefan, who, by the way, you may hear over the weekend by his more flamboyant nickname, Razzle Dazzle, given to him by the Skip Barber officials. But anyway, so it'll be interesting to see how he does. Certainly a lot of buzz surrounding Stefan being an Edmonton native. Some other positive news is that Peter Dempsey is going to be back with Andretti Autosport, continuing on. Yep. So I suspect that at least this will last through the Canadian leg. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him back at Trois-Rivières after Edmonton. And, you know, given how Andretti Autosport performed on the streets of Toronto, you have to think that Wilson and Dempsey are favorites for the podium again. One downer is that it appears that Victor Garcia, winner of the Barber race earlier this year, is out at Team Moore. Team Moore has the entry, but it's TBA. I suspect that Garcia is frantically scrabbling to find cash. His performance outside of Barber have not really been all that great, to be honest. And we'll see how that turns out, whether Team War put somebody else in that number 22 car, or whether they only run the number 2 with Gustavo Yakimin.
Interesting. All right, well, what else for the Mazda Road Nindu do we have?
That's it for now. Keep an eye on this Team War business and see what's going on. And I'm going to try and get a hold of Tyler through sometime during this week and maybe have a quick little chat with him, have him kind of introduce himself to us, see where he's been, what he's been doing this year, and what his plans are for the future.
All right. Well, shall we move into the realm of sports car?
Sure. Is anyone still watching that?
Well, this guy is. I watched the Lime Rock event, thanks very much, and I'll tell you that they had two times as many cars on a smaller track, and they still couldn't look like as big of ass clowns as the IndyCar series did.
You know, Lime Rock is a tight little record. What is it, 1.5 miles?
Pretty much. It's like driving, with as many cars that are on the track, it's like driving around Martinsville, only you go left and right. But we are going to the Mosport this weekend, and that coverage will be available to you via ESPN3. If you cannot get ESPN3, then you should listen to RadioLamar.com because they do an awesome job of covering
even if
the event.
You can get ESPN3.
Yeah.
Turn it on. Shut up.
Will you get
the volume and listen to Indy and the Boys at Radio Le Mans?
Will you get Radio Le Mans coverage if you get ESPN3 because that's who does the commentary for the races.
Nice. See, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you get them. You get them
brilliant.
By default with pictures, albeit sometimes terrible. You get them with pictures at least. But if you can't get the pictures because you're not. Your area is not in tune with.
You live out in the middle of rural Missouri.
Yeah, right. Then you, which will be a problem for me because I want my Le Mans coverage.
Well, you got an Xbox, right?
Yeah, I do. So, but yeah, so we will be going to Mosport. It'll be interesting to see who comes out. The BMWs are looking smashing in the GT class, and to be quite honest, untouchable. So I'm gonna go and I'm gonna say that BMW will win the GTE class. I don't even know who's on the entry list in terms of the LMP cars, but I'm gonna say, because I know the GT class will be packed, I'm gonna say it's gonna go down to the BMWs.
You know, the whole LMP, the whole prototype thing is just, man, I don't know what to make of that anymore. It just seems dead right now.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems dead. I mean, heck, what do? You know.
Mm-hmm.
Do you continue with it? Do you take the prototype and get rid of it and just focus on the GTs, turn it into another IMSA Trans Am series or something like that?
As long as you got people entering LMP, you have to run them. Whether,
okay.
You know, no matter how embarrassing it may look, you have to run them. And if that means it's only going to be the Muscle Milk Aston Martin and the Mazda-powered cars, you know, the Mazda-powered Lolas, then you have to run them.
Well, at Lime Rock, of course, Dyson competed.
And won.
And the Muscle Milk Porsche, driven by Graf and Luhr, were there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who else was in LMPT, or LMP?
There was another Dyson Mazda, and that was it.
Okay.
So.
And then there weren't any LMP2 cars, right?
No, well, no. They went back to the LMPs drive, you know, all together. There was the LMP Challenge class as well as the GT Challenge class, which made things fun. But as far as full up LMPs, there was nothing further.
You know, I would like to see the LMP1 GT race, and then the LMPC and GTC race.
Well, I liked them.
Like, I'd like to put the two challenge series together, and the two, so you'd have a sports car and sports car light.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure there's other people feel the same way.
Yeah, especially all the people that get punted trying to get around the slower traffic. But yeah, Dirk Mueller and Joey Han look to have the championship pretty well in hand, don't they?
Mm-hmm. BMWs have been untouchable this year.
Yeah.
So. But in other news for Le Mans, Lotus came out and said that they're going to contest a full North American as well as international. You know, the International Endurance Cup, the GTs. They're going to come out and compete that in those series with their, what's their car called? The Evora.
The Evora GTE.
Yes.
GT Endurance.
Therefore, putting even more GT competition out there. So now
well, they do have plans of moving into a LMP2 competition in perhaps by 2013. It's not going to happen for 2012, but they're going to hope to start testing that by the end of 2012.
One day. But so that's good news out of there. The GT field just continues to get more and more robust as time goes on. People really seeing a value in you know, putting their money and technology into the GT cars, as those are the ones that are most road relevant.
Yeah.
As far as Formula One goes, I don't really have. See, I'm already yawning. Just getting.
I know, and that seems to be the attitude of the entire world.
Yeah, Formula One has not been overly exciting.
It is off the radar.
So let's just go ahead and bury into the German Grand Prix previews and predictions for this weekend.
Before we get into that, I do want to give a shout out to Steve, aka SJ Skid, over at F1B. For a really nice op-ed that he put out about this fantastic silence that we've been that we've been hearing. He let me see if I can find his article again. Where was it? It was up here. Doggone it.
They took it down.
Here it is. What a difference language makes. But I'm not seeing it on their front page anymore. They come out with so... Oh, there it is. There it is. It's the second one up there. It's right after the podcast. So anyway, click on that. Take a read. It's a nice, well-thought-out op-ed by Steve. Well done. Nothing. We were just a gaggle of stuff before Britain. Nothing before Germany. It's crazy. But anyway, so yeah, predictions.
Vettel.
Yeah, how can it be otherwise, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially now that they've turned around and said, "Oh, okay, you can use the blown diffuser things again." Or the engine mappings again. They didn't say you couldn't use the blown diffuser or the blown under tray. They just said you couldn't use the engine mapping to maintain exhaust flow.
Yeah.
And of course, all the engines were designed with having a continuous flow of gases.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, especially Mercedes and Renault, squawked loudly enough that the FIA said, all right, we give, and rescinded their initial ban, which was at the British Grand Prix, which, of course, didn't have the desired effect that many thought the FIA was going for, and that is inhibiting Red Bull racing. Red Bull still won. Vettel is still a god behind the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
God or demon, I don't know. Maybe demon. He's just evil behind that wheel. So yeah, I don't know how you don't pick. I don't know how you don't pick Vettel for the race win, but the more tricky positions, 2 and 3.
I'll say Weber followed by Hamilton.
Yeah, I don't think Weber makes a podium.
Well, it's definitely not outside the realm of possibility, especially
Yep.
now that in that Red Bull will probably have the master engine kill switch
Yeah.
fully armed this weekend.
Yeah.
That way, if he decides to reject any more team orders, then it'll be all be over. You know what I think's funny is the F1 fans are like, well, team orders have been in Formula One a long time, and we should just adopt them and like them. And then Red Bull actually uses them, and people are like, oh, you told him to slow down?
Well, I think it stems back to what Red Bull themselves said earlier.
Yeah.
Oh, we treat both drivers equally. My ass. No, you don't. And let's be honest. That was a stupid thing to say. It was simply posturing during the Ferrari little fiasco. Massa, Alonso is faster than you. Do you acknowledge? That all that crap. They were trying to gain the moral high ground there, and of course now it's kind of backfired on him.
Yeah.
I'm okay with team orders. It's a team sport. However, when you're dealing with someone like Weber, you got to know how he's going to take that kind of order.
Yeah, he don't take to that kindly.
No, he's not going to. The order that you give to him is you're free to race, but race clean. If you make contact, you're fired. We will cut you off at your ankles.
I hope that they call me to do the firing. Oi, mate, you're fired. Get
Yeah,
out.
man, you like it?
Yeah, get the hell out of here, wanker.
No, so that's what you gotta tell him, is that you're free to race, you screw up and you're dead. You don't say don't race. That's just gonna piss him off, and he's gonna go after it all the more. And so just say race, but race clean. And really, that's really what we as fans want to see. If you remember, well, there's been several times. We've seen Hamilton and Button race extremely hard and have some epic duels. Well, in fact, the same race that I think it was at Turkey last year that Weber and Vettel took themselves out. Hamilton Button had a magnificent battle, but they raced clean.
Well, they
They
had
came out
another
the other side.
great one at Turkey this year
Yeah. And
without
so.
killing each other.
I think it's possible. It's just a matter of drivers having respect for one another, and understanding of one another. I'm not so sure that exists between the two Red Bull teams.
They don't like each other.
I don't think so. So, I really don't think Weber is going to make the podium. I think Hamilton will. I think your other podium finisher is going to be Alonso, I believe.
That's fair.
I would love to see Rosberg.
Schumacher.
Yeah.
Ah, shut your pie hole. Don't make me fire you again.
He doesn't have it. He just doesn't. He makes too many mistakes now.
Right, and we're done talking about F1.
But, and as big of a Mercedes fan as I am, I would love to see Rosberg or Schumacher. I'm sorry. Although
Nice save.
I think that Rosberg would have the better chance. I think currently he's the better driver.
Oh, okay. Now we really are done with Formula One. Not
But,
gonna
I don't.
argue that point.
The Mercedes car just doesn't have the pace required. So I think you'll see Vettel in P1, and then flip a coin for Alonso or Hamilton in P2, P3.
Yeah. And I like I said, Mercedes is too busy correcting blunders from their already faulty design. Trying to save tires, trying to save save the tires,
Save fuel.
save the heating problems. Their DRS and curves are broke more times than not. So I mean the car is just a pig. Which is actually really stunning coming from Ross Brawn. So but anyways. Well, that's all we have this week, folks. Thanks again for listening and taking, the time out of your day to listen to the show. We do appreciate it. As we grow closer to the 100th anniversary, we will be contacting some fans because, like we said, 100th anniversary is about the fans. We could have any drivers, that we'd want to pick up. We could probably bring them on. But you know what? It's not the drivers that make this show. It is, in fact, the fans who listen. So
Absolutely.
we're going to bring on fans to the show and have them talk. And that's all we have. Also, make sure that you follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/openpaddock. Like us because, it's a quick way to get the stories across your desk if you're a Facebook fanatic. Also, if you're a Twitterite like I am, where I Twitter damn near everything I do during the day. Because it's just.
Well, thankfully, not everything.
Yeah, not everything, but more times than not, it's, majority of what I do. You can follow us twitter.com/openpaddock. If you want to follow any of your favorite personalities, just simply frequent the staff page, and then our Twitter handles are located there. So if you want NASA and all things picture of the day, you can follow Doug. If you want
Yay.
complete radio silence, you can follow Mike. If you want political outcries, you can and what's wrong with the world today, make sure to follow Spike. And if you want just random nonsense with some racing and, well, pretty much my daily life, then you can follow mine as well. So all those options are available to you. But we do want to say thank you so much for listening, and thanks for being a reader slash listener to Open Paddock. Thanks so much. Say goodnight, Doug.
Good night.